The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Hercules, 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 we are back. It's Normal Show Live at our new home, streaming live through Stick'Em. I hope you're all enjoying this. Already I'm getting reports from the chat room that the sound quality is awesome. Glad to hear it. If you want to catch us, just check us out at stash.normal.org. We're up in the top right-hand corner, little screen up there. Just click it, and you will be joining us. And, of course, joining us here on the Skype is our good friend and my half-half sister, Cannabis Gary.
Thanks for enunciating that, Russ.
Yes, Mr. Spoff yesterday said, it sounded like I said you were my half-assed sister. That's not true.
Sometimes.
Glad to hear it. Yeah, you can check out the new video chat right here at stickem.com/normalshowlive. Tell all your friends. We have moved away from Blog Talk Radio. I just couldn't put you through all of that bad sound, and it was unfair to the musicians who work so hard and donate their tunes for us that I just had to move it. So I hope you're all enjoying it. Got a lot of people in the chat room right this minute, so enjoy us. We'll be here every day, 1 o'clock Pacific time, 4 o'clock Eastern time, so you can spend your 420 with us. How's it going out there, Carrie? We got rid of the delay. That's another good thing, right?
Well, I can hear actually... delay on my side, but I'm going to try to ignore it for today's show.
Okay, we're still working out the kinks, so bear with us. Today is Wednesday, so it's our Cannabis Science Day with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch is in Washington, D.C. for the Marijuana Policy Project board meeting, so he can't join us live today. We will be playing a best of Dr. Mitch. It's one of his reports about the CASA report on teen availability of marijuana, so good stuff. You want to listen to that. And also, it is our Daily Toker Tunes Irie Wednesday for today, so we'll get some great reggae music from Johnny Reeferseed. He brings us that music every Wednesday, the best in reggae, dancehall, and Latin, calypso, and so on. And also, we've got Ann Davis, a board member from Normal, New Jersey, who we'll be talking to later on in the hour, to talk to her about New Jersey passing medical marijuana in both their assembly and their Senate. They have yet to get it through the governor, but the governor has promised to sign it. So by the end of this week, we should have 14 medical marijuana states in this country. We're very, very happy about that. Nothing wrong with that. Get as many marijuana states as we can while we can. So please stick around with us, and if you're getting any feedback, folks, just if you've got a background window or something like that, you may need to close. We are still working out the kinks. Let me know in the chat room if you have any questions. We do not have live call-in anymore. If you have questions, you will have to do them through chat. But hey, one small trade-off to get us some good quality audio, so I hope you all can understand that. So we're going to take a break here, pay the bills, and when we come back, we'll bring Cannabis Carry back for our normal news. And don't forget to patronize our sponsors. They're donating their money to help Normal and to help you. So help them. Thanks a lot. Be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live. the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
Said, hey, do you have a joint cancer? Would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Oh, lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Just lie, don't hide it. Fire up.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
In Mendocino, the Northern California Community Marijuana's Eradication Team just released their 2009 statistics. The County of Mendocino Marijuana Eradication Team, or COMET, is a federally funded sheriff's office program that consists of a full-time sheriff's sergeant, a full-time deputy, and help from CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planning, the state team that provides air assets and raid team members. 2009 was a record-breaking year by all accounts. They conducted raids on private and public lands and seized 541,250 plants last year from 256 sites, along with 41,100 pounds of processed packaged marijuana and 5 pounds of hash. Also seized was 2 pounds of mushrooms, 2 grams of meth, and 150 oxycodone pills. Their cash and property seizures is listed at $1,072,230. The team is assisted by deputies on a volunteer overtime basis, and all costs are paid from grant money provided by the federal government. CAMP has been around since 1983 and has become the country's largest law enforcement task force. This is just one county in California, and the eradication team is gearing up for an equally busy 2010.
Well, this is trying to eradicate marijuana from those counties, the Emerald Triangle up there in California, is going to be just about impossible. Anyone who is from that area can tell you that. They've been growing marijuana there for years and years and years, and I don't think they're going to be stopping anytime soon. So this idea that we continue to have our taxpayer money going to try to eradicate marijuana when it's, you know, pretty much determined to be impossible, what a waste of time! What a waste of money that could be better going to other situations, other crimes that could be stopped here. Don't know what else we can say about that. It just the cost of a helicopter alone, just to run those Bell helicopters and to get the fuel for them and the overtime that we pay to the cops. Once again, it's just a big waste of money and something we really need to end soon.
And just a few months after public awareness in Kansas about the marijuana substitute K2, lawmakers are already plotting to make it illegal. K2 is a proprietary blend of herbs and extracts that supposedly give its users a high similar to marijuana. It is sold as an incense, but users smoke it to get the high effect. Some herbs that are listed in the ingredients are toxic if eaten. So legal, yes, but safe? The jury is still out. Representative Rob Olson has written legislation that would outlaw fake marijuana, like K2, which are designed to give users the legal high. K2 is available online, but in Kansas, you can buy it in stores. Olson and the Johnson County Sheriff's Master Deputy Chris Farkas said on Monday that K2 and similar products should be banned because the drug's legality gives users a false sense of security when the effects haven't been studied. The legislation would make possession of K2 or other marijuana lookalikes like Salvia divinorum a misdemeanor by outlawing anything that is structurally similar to THC.
Oh, boy. We're going to outlaw fake pot now. All right. So what? Do we get a misdemeanor if we're carrying around a bag of oregano? A bag of sticks and stems? I mean, how far is this going to go? How do you actually outlaw something that isn't technically illegal? You know, this K2 stuff and these fake pots that you see advertised in certain magazines, you know, they don't have a lick of THC in them. So, you know, the Controlled Substances Act is all about the THC. I don't know how you make a law banning something that is legal like that. But, you know, I thought, you know, the thing I thought that was interesting about this, Carrie, is finding out that they can sell this stuff in the stores in Kansas. You say that's the only state where they can do that?
I'm not sure if it's the only state, but a lot of the news stories that I were looking at was pointing that out, that in Kansas you can buy it in the stores. I've never seen it in stores around Oregon, but I wouldn't doubt that it might be in some stores, maybe in Texas or probably truck stops, I'm guessing.
Yeah, okay. And I want to welcome back our live viewers and listeners. The PC on this side of the thing froze. My Firefox froze up on me, and we went off the air for a second. The entire news segment, though, is recorded for our normal daily audio stash. You'll still be able to pick up all of these shows as a podcast in the normal daily audio stash. Look for the player on the right side at stash.normal.org.
Okay, in our last story today, Los Angeles City Council returns today, and city leaders hope they will finally be able to vote on a city ordinance to limit medical marijuana dispensaries. The City Council had stalled last month over restrictions on where the dispensaries could be located. Maps drawn up by planners show that the strict limits they wanted to impose would have eliminated almost every location in the city for a dispensary. Today they will be discussing whether dispensaries should be 500 feet or 1,000 feet from each other and what they are calling sensitive sites, like schools, parks, churches, childcare facilities, and youth centers. The council's ordinance caps the number of dispensaries at 70, but would allow shops that officially registered with the city and are still open in their original locations to remain in business. The estimate is that there are at least 137 such dispensaries that would get a pass if the new ordinances are adopted. Now, LA adopted a moratorium on new dispensaries in 2007 so that the city could draft a permanent ordinance, but the city failed to enforce the ban or agree on an ordinance for the last 3 years, resulting in hundreds of dispensaries opening and operating within the city limits. For an ordinance to pass on first reading, it needs 12 votes in favor and no votes against it. If the council falls short today, which seems likely, it will have to vote again next week. Once the ordinance takes effect, the city can then move to shut down illegal dispensaries. But it most certainly will face legal challenges in this endeavor, and the process could take months or even years to enforce.
Well, once again, if L.A. County and these other places had been on the ball and started thinking about regulating this back in 1996 when the law was passed, they wouldn't be in this trouble now. This is a situation where the voters of the state of California overwhelmingly approve of medical marijuana. They pass Prop 215, but the local yokels, all the people that are still in charge in the counties and the county sheriffs and the local district attorneys, etc., they don't like it. They don't like the medical marijuana, and so they dragged their feet the whole time, refusing to come up with any sort of meaningful regulations. And since there weren't any laws against dispensaries, these dispensaries cropped up, pardon the pun, very quickly and kind of without any sort of guidance from the state or local municipalities. If you want to get a good idea of how this can be run, check out up in the Northern California, up in the Bay Area, where Oakland County has done a very good job of doing their regulations and have had very little problems with their dispensaries. This is not a fault of the dispensaries. This is a fault of the county and city governments not living up to their job responsibilities to regulate these dispensaries in a sensible way. Now we have a situation where so many dispensaries have cropped up that Yes, there are a lot of people that are running dispensaries from an altruistic point of view, trying to help patients. But there's a whole lot of other dispensaries that are just, you know, guys that were dealing weed before in the shadows, wanting to have a storefront. And they're in it for the money, and they could care less about patients. And the problem is that when these bad dispensaries come up, and there's problems involved with them, whether they be crime or fraud or extravagance on the part of the owners, when that happens, it makes the good dispensaries look bad. And you can really see this when we start trying to pass medical marijuana legislation east of our area here in the Pacific time zone. Just recently, they passed the New Jersey Medical Marijuana Act in the Assembly and in the Senate. And all through those negotiations, I was speaking to Chris Goldstein, who's the executive director of Normal New Jersey. And over and over and over, he told me that every time he talked to the legislators and tried to lobby them on this issue, they would say,
we don't want to be like California. No, we don't want to be like California.
And so California, with its Wild West atmosphere and refusal to try to regulate these in a sensible way, have allowed this to become out of control in certain respects. And that has frightened off other states that are trying to take care of the medical marijuana situation. It's really, really unfair that the lack of action by the local governments are going to cause backlash against the hardworking activists in other states that are trying to get this done.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to check our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. And we're going to go right there right now. I'm just pulling that up myself. And if you're a normal chapter and you'd like to get your events on the cannabis community calendar, just send me an email to stash@normal.org with the subject line of calendar request. That'll help me put that out. I get a lot of emails from people that want to post something or have us read something on the stash. Because we get so many requests, I really do have to limit this to just the normal chapters and their particular calendars. For you normal chapter leaders out there, it's really easy. All you got to do is create yourself a Google Calendar. And on that Google Calendar, you'll have the opportunity to share that with certain users. Share it with russ@normal.org, and then it will appear automatically on the normal calendar of events at normal.org/calendar. Now, on Thursday, January 14th, at the Veterans Memorial in Civic Center Park between Lincoln and Broadway, east of Colfax Avenue in Denver, Colorado, Mile High Normal will be having a Off the Steps and Into the House rally, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., so check that out at milehighnormal.org. On Friday, January 15th, Joplin Normal has their Back to School Bash. This will be featuring live DJs, and for information, check out joplin-normal.org. And Saturday is chock full of events for the cannabis community. The U.S. Virgin Islands is having the Bordeaux Rasta Fair. Check out usvinormal.org for that. Michigan Normal is having their first quarter statewide meeting at East Bay Lodge in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Check out minormal.org. Membership meeting for Miami Valley Normal is happening in Middletown, Ohio. MiamiValleyNormal.org or OhioNormal.org for details. January meeting number 2 is taking place in Kansas City, Missouri with Kansas City Normal. Check out takeaction.kcnormal.org. New York Normal is having their New York City membership meeting. You can email jay@jgoldstein.net for information. The 12th annual medical marijuana benefit at Tobacco Road is taking place in Miami, Florida. And from Tennessee, a little note from my friend Chief Greenbud, the great musician who actually plays the song that introduces this calendar. It's 420 somewhere. He'll be appearing at the Foo Bar in, I believe, Nashville, Tennessee. But check out information at tnnormal.org. And again, for information on all of these, just check out the cannabis community calendar at normal.org/calendar. We've got to take a break because it is almost 20 after the hour, and that's a special time for me. We'll be right back. Stick around. We've got Dr. Mitch coming up next, and coming up next, Daily Toker Tunes. Right back in a second.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. But if he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today. It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. All right, time for our Irie Wednesday music, and joining us by telephone from Iowa is Johnny Reeferseed. Johnny, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Russ. When I started doing this, I never thought I'd have a brass band on the Irie Wednesday, but hey, anything can happen.
I know. I listened to this tune earlier today. I really, really liked it. Why don't you tell folks about it?
Oh, it's really cool. Well, the Lowdown Brass Band, they're hailing from Chicago, Illinois. They're a 9-piece horn-driven ensemble with strong roots in the New Orleans second-line tradition. A fierce sousaphone sets the foundation for trumpets, trombones, and saxophones to intertwine with a cacophony of tight lead lines, spontaneous call and response, and bombastic brass attacks. Well, taking a page from the jazz and blues giants of the past, the LBD melds modern funk, hip-hop, reggae, and pop into a unique new style. Lowdown forges new ground with original compositions that challenge the listener and player alike, breaking down the barrier between performer and audience. This song I'm going to play today called We Just Want to Be is a horny reggae groove with simple but meaningful message. I guess the message is leave us alone. But you can hear more of them on MySpace at myspace.com, Lowdown Brass Band, and they're on Facebook, too. It's facebook.com/ELDEEBEE. And they're also on iTunes. I downloaded their CD last night, and it's great stuff. So anyways, smoke a big fat and get your groove on with the Lowdown Brass Band.
All right. Thanks a lot. Johnny Reeferseed. Check them out. Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers, available on CD Baby and iTunes. Just look them up on Google. You'll find them. Great music. Here you go. This is the Lowdown Brass Band with We Just Want to Be. Lowdown Brass Band there. That was a lot of fun. Love that tune. Thank you, Johnny Reefer Seed, for bringing that up to us. We're chatting up here live at Normal Show Live. If you're looking at stash.normal.org, just click the little header up at the top, click the picture, you'll be in the chat room, and then close that other window, right? If you have both of them open at the same time, it can cause a little bit of problems. Sorry for the folks that we've been dropping out. This is our first time with Stick'Em and, still working out some of the technical kinks here. I was just desperate. I had to move. I couldn't stand it anymore, having the bad audio quality at Blog Talk Radio. And, the last straw was going through with their, tech support department. And I was recording, I always record these shows so that we can put it up with the normal daily audio stash. And, what happens is I recorded the shows at high quality and uploaded it back to Blog Talk Radio. And when they receive the show, they recompress it back down to poor quality. So, what was the point of all that? So that was kind of the last straw for me. And out of desperation, I wanted to move to something else. I do want to thank Be Real from Cypress Hill. He has a great show that appears at 4:20 Pacific time on the same Stick'Em platform. And I watched his show and I thought, well, you know what? If it's good enough for Be Real, it's good enough for me. So that's what I was thinking. Sorry about that, folks, about the disconnects. If you want to hear the entire show without the disconnects, I'm still recording it. And so it will be available at the Normal Daily Audio Stash feed. Should be up around 2:30 to 3 o'clock Pacific time. So you'll be able to get all of that information. Adam, thanks for the compliment. Glad you liked the video. Hope everyone likes the suit. Got all dressed up for you today so that we could have a nice video chat. Also, those of you in the chat room, if you want to post your video cam, you can do this. You can do that. You can post your video cam for everyone else to see. I don't know why you'd want to, but you can. So it's available to you if you're interested. Cannabis Carrie is going to be getting our next guest on the line in about 15 to 20 minutes. We'll be speaking with Ann Davis from Normal, New Jersey. She's on the board there to talk about New Jersey's Assembly and Senate passing their medical marijuana bill. It's now moving on to the governor for his signature. But before that, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in a recorded interview from last September about the Center for Addiction and Substance Abuse, known as CASA, and their report on the ability of of teenagers to be able to access marijuana. You won't be surprised that teenagers find it much easier to access marijuana than they do to access alcohol or something else that people check IDs for. So we'll give you that story coming up here right after this break. Got to pay some more bills. We'll see you in a minute.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, ah. Here's your dose of Cannabis Science.
So we're back from our long vacation, and as we do at the middle of every week, we like to talk about cannabis science, the latest studies and reports about cannabis, and we do so with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be back.
Hey, you sent me this study. This comes out of Joe Califano's group out there at the CASA, the Center for, was it Addiction and Substance Abuse?
You got it.
And this study has to do with the parents and kids and some interesting findings in this study. And I thought I'd just give you a chance to tell our listeners a little about it.
I mean, this is over a 70-page paper, but the bottom line is just that marijuana is persistently available to teens. Russ, I was stunned to learn 23% reported they could get pot in an hour or less.
Wow.
I'm on the podcast once a week. I can't get pot in an hour or less. I mean, this is pretty stunning. And 42% said they could get marijuana within a day or less.
Wow.
This is 70 years of prohibition now, and this is what we have. I mean, this was up from last year and clearly one of the highest rates of availability we've ever had. The underground market is obviously not keeping cannabis out of the hands of teens. And that was our whole idea. That was the point of this prohibition in the first place. And when we go back to the 1930s and hear all the horror stories that marijuana was supposed to cause, and clearly none of these things have panned out, and then the last hope was, well, at least it's going to keep these drugs away from our kids. Obviously, it is not. If we need a stronger message for, you know, why it's time to change, I honestly can't imagine what it could be. Do we have to have every single teen say, I can get pot in an hour? It's really stunning to me.
Well, it's amazing with, you know, we've seen the arrests go up year after year after year, and this report itself says that there's been a 35% increase from 2007 to 2008, 35% increase in teens who can get marijuana in an hour or less, and a 14% increase over the last year for teens who can get it in a day or less. So the more arrests just seems to make it easier to get for some reason.
Well, and the funny thing is, I feel like teens in particular are targeted, and both, you know, law enforcement folks and the data suggest that when, you know, teens are caught with cannabis, they do get the book thrown at them, in part because of this strong sentiment to keep cannabis out of the hands of teens. You can imagine, well, gee, if we had a tax and regulated market, would things be better? Well, you look throughout this report, and consistently we see that teens say they have a harder time getting a hold of alcohol than they do of marijuana. So here's this, you know, nice taxed and regulated substance that is actually, you know, often in people's houses, and they say they essentially are having an easier time getting this than they are a harder time getting this than they are the cannabis that is supposedly so illicit and so underground.
Now, of course, this report doesn't want to do anything to look at the problem of prohibition. It wants to foist this problem on what they call problem parents. And what we have seen some research, and you and I have talked about this, about some of the ways that parents can help their kids stay away from drugs. I'd like to talk a little bit about that, but also, you know, how Califano and this CASA group wants to try to blame this on what they call problem parents, I think misses the mark a little bit.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and you can imagine Joe Califano hearing us say, well, this is a sign for basically legalizing cannabis. They would, you know, have a conniption to it. But really, again, when you look really close at these data, it really does suggest that the tax and regulated stuff is, in fact, less likely to reach the hands of teens. And then he does pitch this kind of strange problem parents idea that they're just these bad parents out there, and that's why kids are doing this. Obviously, well, I've never met his kids, but, you know, kids are their own human beings and
yeah.
Make their own decisions and things. The one statistic that I do like to point to is something we've discussed in the past is just that parent involvement and having dinner at home. And it's funny how hanging out with your own children and, you know, having a nice dinner at home 5 to 7 nights a week suddenly makes this dramatic impact on not only teen drug use, but also other problematic behaviors. Some as severe as teen pregnancy, which is kind of a big thing in the news right now.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, even minor things like, you know, getting more homework done and just having, you know, a warmer, closer relationship with the parent. And I, you know, I encourage this time and again, but the bottom line is you often discover, hey, your kids are really delightful little people. And if you, you know, even spend just an hour and a half over chicken and rice, it's stunning how much you learn about their lives and all the things they've learned, and you get a nice perspective on the way things are in the world.
And another thing that I found interesting in this survey, he has a big headline here that says, more teens say prescription drugs are easier to buy than beer. They've been asking this in this survey, they've been asking which is easiest for someone your age to buy, cigarettes, beer, marijuana, or prescription drugs without a prescription. And they say over the years, teens indicated that cigarettes and marijuana were easiest to buy, followed by beer and prescription drugs. But for the first time this year, more teens told us that prescription drugs are easier to buy than beer. What would you attribute that to?
In fact, I'm discovering this from my own undergrads here, and I don't mean to malign SUNY Albany, but they're telling me that the internet availability is astounding, and that, in fact, they fill out these rather bogus medical forms, and the alleged physician somewhere in Paraguay or something confirms that they have whatever disorder it is, and suddenly they get some wild overseas envelope filled with opiates, stimulants, whatever drug of the week, and that they do tend to be able to, you know, mix and match and trade with their friends, and, you know, I'll give you one Ritalin for a Vicodin kind of thing, and that this has become, in some sense, a new underground market in drugs and drug use. And it's all, you know, sort of a blind eye from the pharmaceutical companies. And these are, you know, essential medications, and I'd hate to see them leave the market. But clearly, educating folks on the negative consequences of these would be a big, big plus. Some of these stimulants can be lethal at high doses. They're incredibly addictive, particularly relative to cannabis. And, you know, these opiate drugs, my goodness, they can, you know, drag you right into a life of addiction in ways that are just astounding. Obviously, it's not the case for everybody, but surely not something you want to mess with, particularly early in life when there's so many other things to enjoy.
You know, I posted a story on the Stash yesterday about a drug testing in a Kentucky school where they had found that only one out of 550 kids they drug tested came up positive, and that was a positive test for alcohol. Do you think that this drug testing regime that's been foisted upon the students, these kids in America, has motivated them to move away from cannabis, which is so easily detectable, and onto these prescription drugs?
It's sad but true, Russ. So now you're suddenly in the situation where you know certain substances are definitely going to get you in trouble, and others are going to give you the chance to get away. Everybody really knows that hallucinogens are often used in such small doses, particularly LSD, that they're pretty hard to detect with essential, you know, urine tests. So now I'm getting kids who are basically saying, well, we didn't want to smoke pot because we knew we'd get busted, so we each did a quarter hit of acid. I mean, that just fills me with dread. What a bummer of a situation to have this be the decision. And then I used to get maybe one email a month. Now I get three a week about, you know, how can I beat a drug test in these various ways? And I feel like the drug testing industry has this evil twin, the drug testing beating industry. And so now there are products on both sides going back and forth, and I can't help but suspect in this kind of crazy octopus sort of way that they're in cahoots with each other. As each new thing develops, the other side develops something else new and just keeps us all spending money trying to keep really harmless things out of the information and hands of employers or folks who really should be more concerned with how are you doing in life, not what do you do with your free time.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of that escalating arms race that we had back in the Cold War of the 80s, where each side had that mutually assured destruction, although I guess this is more like symbiotic in nature, where, you know, each industry depends on the other. And speaking of industries, you know, you made that mention about the pharmaceutical industry really not clamping down on these internet pharmacies, so, you know, there's a lot of profit motive involved in that, too.
It's a rough predicament, and I'm, you know, never a fan of prohibitions of this kind of sort, and yet I do feel like, you know, better controls for the use of these substances is certainly possible, but more than anything, educating the consumer. I got a feeling that, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-olds are running around thinking that these drugs are essentially toys, and if they had more information, they would definitely leave them alone, just as we did back, you know, in the turn of the century when people suddenly discovered that, you know, Dr. Poppy's magic elixir actually did have opium in it, and they said, oh my goodness, I don't want to get strung out on this, and they all put it aside. And now I think we, you know, have that opportunity if people were better informed about the pharmaceutical drugs.
Mm. Yeah. Now, one last thing in this report. Again, the report tries to lay a lot of this at the hand, at the feet of the parents that are involved with these kids. And one of his big quotes is to bring back that old saying from back in the day. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? How much of this is scaremongering, and how much of this report, with what they say about how the parents can help by, you know, monitoring their kids late or during their school nights or any of that, how much of that should we accept, and how much should we take with a grain of salt?
I'm afraid it's our recurring theme about correlation and causation, Russ. So it does turn out, at least from these data, that the kids who are staying out late, particularly during the weeknights, are the ones who say, not that they're using more drugs, but at least that drugs are being used when they're out, both alcohol and marijuana on this. But I don't think it's the staying out late that is the cause. And if we are going to all just pull our kids in, that's just going to make them do drugs a lot earlier.
Yeah.
I feel like this is, in fact, an index, sort of a spurious correlate, if you will, of this family involvement thing. So what a surprise if you're hanging out at home and having a nice rap with your parents and reading a book and having a good time. You don't stay out late, but you also have this nice kind of relationship that's usually a buffer against problematic drug use, and you have other interests in things like academics and sports and religious observance and things like that that are usually going to prevent you from at least developing problematic use. And I feel like this staying out late is just kind of a proxy for that. So, yeah, you know, you can give your kids a new curfew, but I feel like that's treating the symptom rather than the cause. Instead, why not sit down and have a talk and start building a relationship?
Yeah, I had to laugh when I saw the it's 10 p.m. Do you know where kids are? Because I don't remember any pot smokers talking about getting together at 10:20.
Exactly.
Dr. Mitch, it's been great talking to you again. We talk with Dr. Earlywine every Wednesday here on the Daily Audio Stash with the latest in cannabis science. And thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me on the show.
That's Dr. Mitch Earlywine, recorded back on September of 2009. Dr. Mitch is at the Marijuana Policy Project board meeting in Washington, D.C., so he couldn't join us live today. But next week on Wednesday, Dr. Mitch live, and you can ask your questions through the chat room, and we'll address them right here on Normal Show Live. Coming up next, we're going to speak with Ann Davis from Normal, New Jersey, about the passing of medical marijuana in the Senate and the Assembly, and the soon-to-be signature from the governor that will make New Jersey the Garden State for real, the 14th medical marijuana state. Stick around, everyone. This is Normal Show Live. Thanks for being patient while we work out the new system.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 45 after the hour. We're going all the way across the continent to the beautiful state of New Jersey. We're joined by Ann Davis from Normal, New Jersey. Ann, how are you, my dear?
Hey, Russ. I'm
great now.
You're great now. It's just past 4:20 in your time zone, so I'm sure you're just fine.
Well, I'm great about the bill passing in both houses in New Jersey, for sure.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. I'm sure that activists out there are super excited. Is there any word yet on when Governor Corzine will put his John Hancock on this?
Not yet. He has publicly stated that he's going to sign it, and we're just hopeful he remains true to his word. We're feeling good. I don't foresee any problem whatsoever. It's just a wait and see now. It's only a matter of days. I believe his authority ends on the 19th officially.
Oh, boy. So he's just got 6 days left to be able to sign this. I'm pretty sure he will. We do have a comment from the chat room I wanted to bring up from WV Moonshine, who says, and we've talked about this a little bit, about how restrictive the New Jersey law was compared to the other 13 medical marijuana states. It says, it is concerning that New Jersey took out the right for patients to grow their own. This move combined with a change to allow for-profit caregiving facilities just strikes a bad chord. How do people feel about that in New Jersey? Is there a lot of concern about not being able to grow at home?
Well, there is, especially among the patients, because of the, you know, the cost aspect. Obviously, the most economical for the patients would be to permit home cultivation. Taking that out of the bill was really only one of the only way it was going to happen in New Jersey was to remove the home cultivation. We have some very conservative politicians
here,
and they were afraid of people sort of growing in their homes that it was going to be more accessible to the children, you know, the whole story. And they just felt that if it was more regulated and more controlled and they didn't allow for the home cultivation, it might be more workable. And then a lot of people have been talking about, you know, this for-profit notion. And I had presented to our legislators a model alternative treatment center based on my experience with California, Colorado, and Michigan, and, you know, just knowing what is going on in other states, what's working, what's not, and what the concerns were in New Jersey that was making them want to implement more restrictions on the bill. And what my position was is you're basically saying, okay, you're taking out home cultivation and you're saying nonprofit only, but I want you to think about that. Who is going to come into New Jersey as an experienced grower and set up the systems with the investment of money it takes, you know, for the ventilation, the lighting, the irrigation systems, the nutrients, the real estate, whether it's, you know, purchased or leased, it doesn't really matter. They want security systems. So you're talking about investments to the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Who is going to come in and be willing to do that if they can't make a profit?
Yeah.
What experienced and qualified individual people would be willing to take that on under New Jersey's very restrictive bill?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at what they were proposing to say, okay, well, we want you guys to come in. We want security. We want it this way. And we're going to limit the amount of qualifying conditions. So now you have a much smaller pool of potential clientele on a center. What I had proposed was to allow for-profit. It's working very well in Colorado. They're not experiencing problems with the for-profit model in Colorado. And I think Colorado is one of the best models.
Right. And you know, it strikes me funny, too, that the legislators would be afraid of marijuana getting out of control because of home grow. And yet, at the same time, when I talk to Chris a lot of times, he says, oh, they're all scared because of California and all the rampant dispensaries. So it sounds like they're just scared of marijuana, period.
Oh, they are. But now there's some pretty bad talk that under this bill, even though it passed, it leaves a very big door open for the commissioner who's promulgating the regulations to fine-tune it. They can regulate the strains. They can regulate the pricing. And now there's this notion that they're talking about only allowing initially 6 nonprofit centers, 2 in the north, 2 in the central, and 2 in the south.
Oh.
And we're going to run that program for 2 years, and then we're going to reevaluate it and allow the for-profits to come on board. I'm not sure what the rationale is behind that, but they're talking about limiting it to just 6 centers.
Wow. And how many people are there in New Jersey? How big a state? Tens of millions?
Oh, yeah. We're very heavily populated. So now, going back to that nonprofit versus for-profit, you're one of these six centers. You have millions of people, and even if you look at only the qualifying medical conditions and those people that would be utilizing marijuana, but six in the state is such an excessive demand that I think the facility that you would need, the investment could be $500,000. It could be greater than that. Mm. And again, to say, well, gee, it has to be nonprofit, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Right. Now, going back to you were talking about the restrictive list of conditions. The one thing that a lot of people will point out is the lack of chronic pain as a condition. Any other restrictions compared to the other medical marijuana states?
Oh, it's very restrictive. You can only obtain medical marijuana in New Jersey now if you have cancer, the obvious, AIDS, HIV, Crohn's, wasting syndrome, MS, ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, epilepsy, and another intraspasticity disorder. That's about it, and glaucoma. And we had, in the first version of the bill, a lot more qualifying conditions, but they just narrowed it down and narrowed it down. However, they are allowing the commissioner to expand the qualifying medical conditions.
Okay. And how about getting that qualification? Is it just a doctor's recommendation? Does there need to be a review by some sort of board or anything like that?
It is a recommendation by a physician with whom you have an ongoing relationship. So what we have out in California, Colorado, and some other states where you can consult with a doctor, as anybody would consult with a pain management specialist mm-hmm. for any condition, the other states are allowing you to consult with a doctor for the purpose of obtaining marijuana as medicine. New Jersey is not allowing that to happen.
Okay.
The recommendation has to come from your treating physician.
That's going to be really difficult because I know that I've found out here in Oregon that a lot of the doctors who, first of all, a lot of doctors are ignorant and they don't believe in medical marijuana in the first place. So if you're stuck with your longtime general practitioner for 20 years and he doesn't like pot, well, you might be out of luck. But even the ones that do support medical marijuana oftentimes work for a health management organization, an HMO, their insurance or their clinic or their hospital they work for will fire them if they start recommending marijuana. So is there any idea of how many doctors in New Jersey might actually be for this to help patients out?
I don't know that I can give you a number, but I can tell you that it's probably split. I mean, I know that I have a handful of doctors, you know, in our area that are willing to start giving the recommendations. But, you know, it still creates a situation. For example, there's one doctor of internal medicine locally here who is willing to start prescribing. He already has a full practice. He can't take on any more patients, forgetting about the medical marijuana. He has a full practice. So those patients that are existing are fortunate enough to have him as their doctor. But if I wanted to switch over to him, you know, and you have now all the medical marijuana patients say, hey, I want him to be my doctor, and I will have an ongoing relationship because that's who I want, he may not be open to accepting any new patients anyway. So it still creates a problem with this limitation.
Wow.
But, you know, hopefully we can expand that over time.
Boy, what a problem that is. We're speaking with Ann Davis from Normal, New Jersey. Check out the website at normlnj.org. And you made a few updates on that site. It's looking really good. I also saw that you had Georgine DeMaria out there making some news on this and telling people about the passage of this law. So,
she's done a great job. She was actually on ABC yesterday, and she is at the forefront of the movement of the patients that don't qualify under the bill, because Miss New Jersey has been an activist for medical marijuana. She has chronic asthma where she's been hospitalized repeatedly and nearly died many times in her life. She does not qualify under this bill.
Oh, my gosh. And I met her out in Boston, and people always kind of snicker when they think about marijuana for asthma, but asthma is a seizure disorder, and marijuana, THC specifically, is a bronchodilator, so there's no reason that medical marijuana can't work for someone like that. Boy, it sounds like there's still plenty of battles ahead as far as trying to, A, open up the number of conditions that are available, B, getting enough doctors to be able to handle the demand, and C, being able to get enough dispensaries and access for people to be able to actually get the medicine. So I want to encourage everyone to get involved with Normal New Jersey out there, normlnj.org. Are there any email addresses or phone numbers they should know for contact?
Well, the main website has Normal New Jersey contact information, and anybody is welcome to email me with questions at any time. I've been getting flooded since this bill passed, but my personal email is law@annmdavis.com if anybody wants a personal response. I've had more people that want to open a dispensary call me today than I can possibly tell you. You know, and unfortunately, there's only going to be six is what we're hearing on the, on the initial get-go.
So law@annmdavis.com?
Yes.
All right. We're putting that up in the chat room so people can send an email if they'd like to talk to you specifically. And again, thanks also, and this is kind of off track of the New Jersey stuff, but I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about this new Normal Women's Alliance available. People can get information on that at normal.org/women. And again, you're a perfect example of how professional women, responsible mothers out there are standing up for cannabis. Do you have anything to say to the other women out there that might be listening?
Oh, yes. We need all the women to get involved as much as possible. And I think, you know, some of the shift comes from the women that are just stepping up in these traditional roles. You know, I, for one, am a mom. I've got a 16-year-old, a 5-year-old. And, you know, I teach at a local university as well as having a law practice. And I'm a damn Republican. And
that's okay. We still like you.
You know, I didn't admit it for years because I was afraid to, but no, closet Republican. Just like, you know, it was bad enough being a closet pothead, but now you got to be a closet Republican within the movement. But Jessica Corey has encouraged all of us to come out and say, you know what, we are moms, and we want things changed. We want to put an end to government spending, wasteful government spending. And, Russ, this is one of the funniest things that I read in one of our papers in New Jersey yesterday, talking about wasteful government spending and, you know, the millions of dollars that they're wasting convicting marijuana growers, users, and anybody for possession of marijuana. And we have John Wilson, right? Mm-hmm. He's an MS patient. He had 17 plants in his yard. He was facing 20 years. His sentencing comes up on February 5th. I read the paper yesterday, and there was a former baseball player who shot his limo driver.
Yeah.
And the caption was that he's eligible for parole in 18 months.
Wow.
So in New Jersey, you can kill somebody, and you're only going to serve 18 months, but if you grow 17 plants, you're facing 20 years. And that's a big problem.
It's a big problem. Ann Davis from Normal New Jersey, thanks for joining us here on our show as we're working out the new details here on our new Stick'em feed. Thanks a lot, and if you want to hear the whole show, check it out on stash.normal.org.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.